in the dark with the radio spark. Meet me where the most light falls. You are listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. Introductory music provided by purpleplanet.com. Hello, and welcome to Where the Most Light Falls, an audio literary journal. I'll be sharing poetry and other kinds of writing, and maybe a few stories of my own, and we'll be listening to some good music today. This is my 10th show, and I'm celebrating. Thank you for joining me. Let's listen to The Northerner Diaries, an album by Jeremy Soule. Symphonic Sketches. Recently, my friend Marichet Garcia sent out a tweet that said, "The world can be so loud and so blind, and I am too soft-spoken and a ghost." Sometimes I feel that way too, and I know many writers have a common experience, but Marisha is incredibly talented, and if you visit her at her website, marichagarcia.com, you can find her impossible garden, her forest with stories and beautiful art. Let me read something that she wrote. This is in the stories section. It's called Slow Walk into the Heart of the Forest. I've started, but I've barely begun. The forest is deep even along its edges. Its heart is too well hidden, even though one can feel its presence in everything and every creature. Maps are mere tools for pretending to know the paths, perhaps only good enough to mark the way stations of longing and loneliness, trigger warnings. So slow I go, circumnavigating my own defenses and fears. I fight even myself as if there aren't enough dragons along the way, as if there are only dragons, as if I have so much life to spare. I clutch my scribbles close, checking from time to time if maybe something has changed to reveal a clue, a secret, a signature. For this is known, that the forest seeds itself in all heart creation and grows into a story when it is time. Sometimes we feel like ghosts, but we are made of a more visible substance. Sometimes we feel haunted, but we can welcome our ghost. We can listen to what they have to say. I'm going to read something from a website called Writing the Polish Diaspora. This is an entry with the title, On the Road, Hijacked by Memory. The article features a poet named Andrina Zawinski and a poem with that name, On the Road, Hijacked by Memory. Riding another lazy Sunday afternoon, along the sun-drenched blacktop stretch coasting through California's Central Valley, its pastures peppered by slaughterhouse steer, its fields dense with migrants, some sporting United Farm Worker eagles on caps, all of them packed into growers' whitewashed school buses, all of them off to bend and hoe, chop and prune, pick and haul ag giants' nuts and roots and fruits for the Walmart supercenters and the Taco Bells. In the car's back seat, church onion domes crop up inside my head, their rows of candles flickering again for all my dead. For the Ukrainian grandfather, face reddened from the heat of hot steel, muscles knotted and clothes grimy, who choked to death struggling with words in a strange tongue, lungs dense in smoke and soot, air and water fouled, forging Pittsburgh steel for the Carnegies. For the Slovak one who carried United Mine Worker protest pickets to the coal bosses instead of pick and shovel down into the pitch dark shafts of the Windburn mine, who survived a cave-in but not being robbed by the company store, and a black lung death. For my mother, after the assembly line night shift at Federal Enamel, inspecting pots and pans for dimples and blisters, one hand at the small of her aching back bent over the Amana, the other scrambling eggs, then scooting my brother and me off to school neatly dressed with full bellies. For my father at Pressed Steel, welding railroad cars in the McKees Rocks bottoms, tagged Cossack and taunted to jump and spin and kick, who got lost in a bottle of vodka and Thorazine, another blue collar chasing a middle-class dream. But the range here today along this California stretch runs ragged in rain shadow and a watery-eyed sky looming above tract homes and trailer camp estates, flashy billboards boasting sprouting condos, commercial real estate for Nestle's Purina Works, another Chrysler Jeep dealership, new strip mall saddling up to wheat and oats and alfalfa, the Delta's humpback hills carpeted green in spring, everything predictable, unlike this day trip, hijacked by memory to detour along a bumpy back road, my own breath now so heavy laden, my every muscle aching. Andrina Zawinski's latest poetry collection, Landings, is from Kelsey Books. She has published two previous full collections of poetry, Something About from Blue Light Press, a Penn Oakland Josephine Miles Award recipient, and Traveling in Reflected Light from Pig Iron Press, Youngstown, Ohio, a Kenneth Patchen competition winner. She has also authored four chapbooks and is editor of Turning a Train of Thought Upside Down, an anthology of women's poetry. Her poems have received accolades for free verse, form, lyricism, spirituality, and social concern. She founded and runs the San Francisco Bay Area Women's Poetry Salon and is features editor at poetrymagazine.com. I'd like for you to hear now two poems by the Northern Irish poet Mark Burns. And I'm going to let you hear him read them without any music in the background because his voice can be soft.
Elvis from Pimmer. Wavering, disbelieving, uncertain in air. An errant apostrophe, polarized, awkward, disordered. Poetry, you're not serious, soft in the head, delirious. Have you been sniffing lead again? Poetry is not what we do here. You must be queer. Poetry is crying from baby gay lips. You shoot from the hip this healthy nail bone. Life work is not outrageous fun. Tape measures are for woodwork and joinery, not imaginary embroidery. Poetry and easel painting won't fill a diesel fuel tank. Paint these outside breeze block walls, two coats of what it says on the tin. Arc the claw hammer, rasp the bow straw. Kneel on this path, follow my commanded law. Change the transit van time, forge future weapons in the white hot foundry fire. Poetry, painting, music as well. You make me spew, seasick and nauseating swell. Damn your personal pleasure, fancy leisure is not near the trademark of a man. Fingering ragtime scales won't boost business sales. Surrender this jelly roll, Martin, cold hard cash is a needier sorting. Of your deadbeat flirty friends, who drives a Mercedes-Benz? Be gone, vagabond clown, absent your spurious reality. Plaster scratch this finality. You're not made of stardust. You were not born of stardust. A celebration of failure, immobilized, nosedived, demoralized, anesthetized, prescriber of gloom, nail-biter, over-imbiber. Smaller than sand, clinging gristle crushed between sandstone. Flat, coarse, monotone, joyless, and coitus. Contemptible, cumbersome perpetuation. Was I not born of stardust? Am I not born of stardust? I was cobbled from canvas and paper, scrunched, stretched, torn, singed at the dog-eared corners, painted over, scrawled on, a background backdrop, half-hidden scenery in another actor's play. Unedited story form, words rubbed out, scratched over, and delved up ink on a vandalized page. Someone else writing my story. I am canvas and paper. Time taught the painting of background and thought turned the page, blank on the other side, write for new remarks on a virgin page. I am canvas and paper. So poetry, aye, poetry. It's a chord of grace, your crap skeptic face no longer frightens. It's my planted stance, the dance revolves, blunt poisoned lance, no shame. This is my nourishment, encouragement, a fluorescent, sparkling, effervescent, blood-fed, constant, pulsing heart. Center stage spotlight, a Broadway part. So poetry, I poetry. I'll read it and recite it, not quiet, but out loud in public places, gathering spaces. A selected choice, hear Cohen's golden voice. So poetry, painting too. The shades, the colors, the moods, tones, fuse and twines, one with the music, deep chill, bold sadness, and bugle horn gladness. Choruses, versing, building, spinning, pirouetting, turning, constant yen, never done learning, sharing, staring into a deep blue lake shimmering in midnight moonlight. Plunging in, goose bumped and bare arsed. Absorbing bread from hell. Manna, it's cafe jazz in a manna. It's stripping white flower fields and scattering sunflower seeds. Clasping hands and conjoined with pagan fairies. Tangling the boulevards of Buenos Aires. An almond-eyed, generous lover. Twist, twirl, and dangle, so sultry September night. Red polka dot dress, thin sheer cotton, lifting, shifting, hand resting by a cover thrown tight. Simply, it is the song of a soul. It's a gypsy hex and hot Jezebel sex, submerged, drowning, re-emerged, baptized in the flow of the River Jordan. The perfect distillation of concentrated symbolic expression, lines, rhymes, forms, chords, meaning and leaning into the light, welcoming them home through a wide open door. The sharing of what it is to be human, be loved, begotten, bewildered by stardust. I am born of canvas and paper. If you dream yourself a seven-winged dancing seahorse, leaping with translucent salmon, gliding over continental shelves, you can write yourself a rainbow-flavored orchid, open to the winter sun on Kilimanjaro, and taste of yourself blue pistachio ice cream and caramel cheese-filled bagels. To do this, we must paint ourselves with scalpel-tipped brushes, wet it with milk water and link chain oil, standing in our nakedness, unrobed of every goat-haired shirt and requisited heavy rolled hat, and stare unblinking at manifested reflection in a three-sided split-shirted mirror, and sketch and draw and paint, trace our curves and fill in the dimples, accentuate the battle scars and life-worn ripples, cross-hatch and shade every unblessed blow, whipped upon the sculptured beauty, either by ourselves or others.
You can find Mark on Facebook at MarkBurns69. He is a writer, broadcaster, poet, and all sorts of nonsensical things. And he has written for Culture Northern Ireland, a wonderful publication. Let me tell you a little more about it. It is Northern Ireland's leading art arts and cultural website covering music, literature, heritage, sport, dance, theater, the visual arts, and much more besides. And you can find them at culturenorthernireland.org. I've been thinking a lot about my country. Oh, what can I say? Let me try to express myself in a poem I wrote. It's called Star Spangled. A neutron star radiates from its new moon pedestal as if it would preach the gospel to a repentant, eager audience. A New Testament master, persuasive in a rasping voice, or a newspaper boy on winter city streets, lips icy, gloveless hands preparing to toss the results of an election on which citizens have based their last hopes. Or a circus ringmaster who looks over his performers expectant just before the big tent begins to emit smoke and a burst of flames capsizes his dreams. Or a torch once carried by a fine harbored lady who would now beg to differ with the boulevard celebrity and its far-flung, cast-down angels. You know, John Guzlowski, another poet friend of mine, sent out a message that said, "A man on an empty beach knows everything there is to know about love." I met a friend on Twitter recently. Her name is Mary Beth, and she sent me some poems for the show. Here's one that's called The Faker. They say if you put a copper penny under your tongue, you can fake a fever. I tried it once, and it leaves a taste of blood. But I never felt the need to feign sickness. I've always had to pretend that I was well. Collecting, I'm fines, and the strength to pull my lips into a smile. In my mouth, I suppose they both leave the same taste and are pretty much worth the same, too. Another poem by Mary Beth called Seeds. My mouth is full of seeds that will never grow. Though my chest is fertile with the remains of everything that has died there, I haven't any tears left to water them. I remember a time when there were so many flowers, I couldn't even speak, but I can't cry like that anymore. One more from Mary Beth called The Wild. The wild in me is starving. Feed me your sky. Let sunsets die on my lips. Feed me the midnight air and moonlight that dances down your neck. The wild in me is starving. Hold your hand out and feed me the sadness you've ripped from the garden in your chest. Mary Beth Kollwitz has had several haiku published in Haiku Journal and Three Line Poetry, and was named one of the poetry's best-kept secrets by the online publication Bunbury Magazine. She was honored to have 5 poems recently included in an anthology, Heron Clan 5, published by Katherine James Books, 2018. For Mary Beth, writing poetry began as a method of pain management to cope with emotions she otherwise felt unable to express. Her understanding of the human condition and ability to convey it in simple sincerity has made Mary Beth's poetry truly remarkable. She currently resides in Michigan and enjoys sketching. She's also an amateur photographer. This past weekend, my old cat, L.A., died. She's been my friend for about, 17 years at least. And I was feeling really sad. And as people sometimes do, I received a gift in words. And this was a poem from my friend Marianne Smith. It's called Shadows. For such a very small creature, you have left a huge hole in my life. The atmosphere in the house has changed completely, and it smells quite different. My shopping list is so much shorter now that I avoid the pet food aisle, and I can stay out or away for longer, and I do. That clump of grass at the end of the garden gets me every time. And in the mornings, when, forgetting, I stumble down the stairs and into the shadowed hall, I keep saying hello to my shoes. Marianne's a fine poet. I've shared some work by her before. Let me pull out a couple more poems. This is Marianne reading her poem, Unbroken, which was shortlisted in the 2018 Hungry Hill Writers Poets Meet Politics competition.
Unbroken. Remember that morning's slow introduction through frames of pale daylight. How the sad sweet song of the robin opened for the dawn chorus. How the sun seeped in through cracked curtains to slake the parched darkness like whiskey drunk straight through a straw. We were hungry for news that morning, which seemed so long to come. And when at last, exactly on the hour, the clock radio sprang into life, even the pips seemed to sound like the slowed down alarm call of a blackbird. Then, as the knelling tones of the newsreader carved the moment in stone, outside, the day just got on with itself, as it always will. The continuity of time, the sly shift of the seasons, and all of that life we have the arrogance to dismiss as not sentient, unstopping in its quest for survival, while we stumble on, evolved as we are, never to live in the moment, but only to anticipate the next. Yet always, always, to remember that morning, the unbroken birdsong, the breaking news.
Marianne is a writer and online bookseller. She manages Booksmith. You can find Booksmith on Facebook at Booksmith UK Internet Bookseller. I met Marianne at the O'Bell Poetry Venue in Cork, Ireland. I had a splendid time with her a few years ago, and we've continued our correspondence. Next up, I will amuse you with my attempt to read a poem in the Scottish dialect sent to me by Kevin McSkimming. Sometime we'll get Kevin to read one of his own poems and record it, but for now, you've got me. And the poem is called Skinman's Cummings Rant. Respect to all and her and him, and respect to yourself too. To the man in the street, you should keep your word until he does aught to you. Don't say you'll fight, then run like shite. You'll look a coward too. And if you're right, you'll stand and fight. You'll get the message through. No, any more respect your kin, 'cause a gift they gave to you. The gift of life with all the strife, if lucky to see it through. And when it started until departed and done your dance and play, be true to all, to and mare the end, or else you have to pay. Kevin McSkimming was born in 1971 in Ayr, Scotland. He has four sons and two grandchildren, and he is training in media studies. He lives now in Kettering, England. And now let's hear some poetry from Derek Sellen. I also met Derek at O'Bell in Cork. He recently sent me four recordings of his own poetry. First one's called The Sky of Salamanca.
The Sky of Salamanca. The Sky of Salamanca refers to a ceiling fresco that was created by Fernando Gallego in these 15th, early 16th century, and it's been moved from the ceiling in the University of Salamanca to a display in a darkened room. And this poem tries to recreate the experience of walking into that room and seeing the stars, painting the stars gradually come into view. The sky of Salamanca. Your eyes seem to invent star-studded forms as they emerge from darkness. There is the sun, but not the moon. Sagittarius, but not Capricorn. The Hydra, but not the three-headed dog. It is a third of Gallego's dome of the sky, two-thirds lost to Renaissance makeovers, consumed by the black hole where the past used to be. Only this escapes its pull, shining with centuries-old light. The centaur dangles Lupus from his spear. The ox driver wears Arcturus as the knot of his garment. Libra weighs the invisible matter of space. Celestial chariots are routed along galaxies. Phoebus tailgates Mercury. You twist your head to see the figures in their conflicting highways, as if you spin at night in a field to read the fictions in the sky.
And a second poem by Derek.
This is a poem based on an image by the Spanish artist Maruja Mayo, Dos Mujeres en la Playa, which shows two women running on the beach. One liked to sleep on the left side of the bed and one on the right. One muffled herself like a Berber bride and one loved to drink the light through her skin. One unnerved you with her silences, one with her confidences. I was a lover of both. One would lie gleaming on top of me like a lion at its prey, and the other lifted no more than a hem in the night to let me in. Twins, without even the difference of a mole. Who could swear which was the Sphinx in the darkness and which was running bare? Whatever games they played, slipping in and out of each other's identity, ended with the boating accident, a mile off the beach. Strong currents, black rocks, stripped and battered the one corpse that came to shore, so that I called both their names, cradling her head. The sea did not distinguish. Like them, it revealed and hid.
Marvelous. Let's have one more.
Aesop. This is a poem based on the painting of Aesop by Velázquez. Many of the stories known as Aesop's fable were in fact written by others in later times, and his life is equally an invention. See, he was supposedly a slave who rose to be an advisor to kings. Aesop. That face. You had to invent it. A gaunt arrangement of bone and muscle. Someone who knows the quirks of pride and greed. A man as near anonymous as it's possible to be, lending his vagrant name to others, authoring tales long after he is dead. One hand cups a book, the other's slung in his dust-brown coat, the wounded hand of a general or withered hand of a beggar. A jobbing storyteller, a fabled fabulist, with a biography that begins in the slave quarters and ends at the bottom of a cliff. By the threshold of power, leaning slightly back in wry appraisal, in the atrium of a global bank or the hallway of a parliament, he sees the fox and cockerel in you.
You can find out more about Derek Salen at wanderingwords.org.uk/author/Derek, D-E-R-E-K. Here's a note from his website. Over many years, I have written poetry, plays, and short stories. I've been inspired by topics such as Spanish painters, Korean musicians, and the life of Richard Brinsley Sheridan. Recent successes have included winning the Hungry Hill Poets Meet Politics Prize and the Five Words Poetry Competition. I have a radio play script in the finals of the Wirral Festival competition, results yet to be announced. My father was from Rochester, and his family had been traced back by an Australian member, Joe Sellin, to the 16th century as watermen on the Thames and Medway. Recently, I've begun to create art on the computer, and I have designed a poetry collection cover and provided the images for a set of career counseling cards, blacktulippress.com. Recently, my friend Raymond Szilard, who is the editor of the Cynical Journal and also the station manager for spiritplantsradio.com, asked me if I would record two poems of my own and one from a poet that has influenced me and send them to him so he could share them at an event in Massachusetts, which I was unable to attend. So I'm going to share those recordings with you now as well. Underwater politics. At the center of the cephalopod, a night strobe bulb fluorescent gleams under a thinly glowing globe. Below its tentacles, strips of flexible lightning go streaming out like synthesizers, and we are struck with wonder at the sea, planeted as it is with splendiferous creatures. Cnidarian stars, ctenophores lassoing their small mooned prey, soft-bodied sea anemone upended in cylindrical silence, inviting passers-by to a seance prefaced by venomous tea and clownfished appetizers. Though secretly we shudder at predation, at the way even a gentle touch creates the doomed paralysis for those swept in by fate or daring, we are not so myopic that we fail to witness while we wait, staring, struck dumb with admiration for the solitary glories of this space, the corners of our mouths turned slightly up, like crouched and muted sympathizers. Nexus. The day the corpse flower began to bloom in Tucson, a caravan of African elephants at Amboseli went on nighttime safari. Deep in the dark, a 200-pound calf came calling from his mother's thighs. A boy hairy, short-trunked, ears like small continents, pachydermos, milk teeth tusks in a diamond pattern, lustrous. A herd of low grumbles made a late melody. At dawn, the grazer browsers looked for breakfast in the bush, Mount Kilimanjaro at their backs, dry lakes looming. Their trunks teased leaves toward their mouths. And all the while, back at the zoo in Arizona, the corpse flower unrolled itself slowly. Slowly, for hours. Red blossom opening before onlookers, cameras clutched, and I, remote viewer, watched the birth live online. Where the nexus between the now that flowers and the land of elephants in my mind, waiting for the day's first taste, held in the fibrous tunic of my own mammalian eye. Fastened on an elephant carcass, bones baked by midday sun. Tonight I can write the saddest lines by Pablo Neruda. Tonight I can write the saddest lines. Write, for example, the night is shattered and the blue stars shiver in the distance. The night wind revolves in the sky and sings. Tonight I can write the saddest lines I loved her, and sometimes she loved me too. Through nights like this one, I held her in my arms. I kissed her again and again under the endless sky. She loved me. Sometimes I loved her too. How could one not have loved her great still eyes? Tonight I can write the saddest lines. To think that I do not have her, to feel that I have lost her, to hear the immense night still more immense without her. And the verse falls to the soul like dew to the pasture. What does it matter that my love could not keep her? The night is shattered and she is not with me. This is all. In the distance, someone is singing. In the distance. My soul is not satisfied that it has lost her. My sight searches for her as though to go to her. My heart looks for her, and she is not with me. The same night, whitening the same trees. We of that time are no longer the same. I no longer love her, that's certain, but how I loved her. My voice tried to find the wind to touch her hearing. Another's. She will be another's. Like my kisses before. Her voice, her bright body, her infinite eyes. I no longer love her, that's certain, but maybe I love her. Love is so short, forgetting is so long. Because through nights like this one, I held her in my arms. My soul is not satisfied that it has lost her. Though this be the last pain that she makes me suffer, and these the last verses that I write for her.
I read those lines, or some of those lines anyway, at the gravesite of my little old cat that we buried over the weekend. I thought it was appropriate. We have loves of many kinds. And love is so short, and forgetting is so long. And here come those ghosts again, rattling at their cages. All they need is a little company. I think I'd like to share with you a song now. Alison Krauss' song is called Ghost in This House. Seems appropriate for our theme.
I don't pick up the mail. I don't care if it's clean.
What about the scene in Hamlet where Hamlet encounters the ghost of his father?
I am thy father's spirit, doomed for a certain term to walk the night, and for the day confined to fast in fires, but that I am forbid to tell the secrets of my prison house. I could a tale unfold whose lightest word would harrow up thy soul. List, list, oh list, if thou didst ever thy dear father love, revenge his foul and most unnatural murder.
Murder?
Murder most foul, as in the best it is, but this most foul, strange and unnatural. 'Tis given up that sleeping in my orchard a serpent stung me. But know, thou noble youth, the serpent that did sting thy father's life now wears his crown.
Oh, my prophetic soul, my uncle.
By that incestuous and adulterate beast, with witchcraft of his wit, with traitorous gifts, won to his shameful lust the will of my most seeming virtuous queen. But soft, methinks I sent the morning air. Sleeping within my orchard, my custom always of the afternoon. Upon my secure hour, thy uncle stole, with juice of cursed ebony in a vial, and in the porches of mine ears did pour a leprous distillment. Thus was I sleeping by a brother's hand, of life, of crown, of queen, at once dispatched. Cut off, even in the blossoms of my sin. No reckoning made, but sent to my account with all my imperfections on my head. Oh, horrible! Oh, horrible! Most horrible. If thou hast nature in thee, bear it not. Let not the royal bed of Denmark be a couch for luxury and damned incest. But howsomever thou pursuest this act, taint not thy mind, nor let thy soul contrive against thy mother aught. Leave her to heaven, to those thorns that in her bosom lodge to prick and sting her. Fare thee well at once. The glowworm shows the matin to be near, and gins to pale his ineffectual fire. Adieu.
There's poetry everywhere. Poetry in the music. Poetry in the old, familiar literature. Poetry in our ghost. My friend David White has a ghost. It's the ghost of his brother. At David's website on Facebook, he has a quote from Rumi at the top. It says, "You have to keep breaking your heart until it opens." I'm going to let him explain about the ghost of his brother. This is a post that he did on Facebook. It says, "Thank you." I've posted much on here about Cyan, my niece, how my brother divorced himself from the rest of the family and certain friends for what remain unknown reasons, despite efforts to contact him and understand. I haven't seen my brother or Cyan since April 12, 2012. Him leaving has redefined my life in different ways, most notably being my answer anytime anyone may ask, "What's the most painful thing you've ever been through, physical or psychological?" My answer now is simple and quick. Cyan was 2 the last time I saw her, the last time I told her I love you. She will be 8 on Wednesday the 28th. I was working earlier and saw some balloons, one with happy birthday on it, nearby. I asked a friend walking past whose birthday it was. She said, "It's my granddaughter. She would have been 10. She died." My immediate gut reaction was everyone's favorite exclamatory four-letter word, and I don't mean love. I added, "I'm really sorry." She said, "It's all right. I thought you knew." "I'm really sorry," all I could think to say. "It's okay," she said. "She's in a better place." But thankfully, someone called out to her at that moment, asking about chairs or something for the party they were having. It saved us both. She didn't have to say anything else about her granddaughter, and neither did I. She walked away, checking on chairs and decorations, and I went back to work shoveling and thinking about Cyan. I have thought before, when someone you love dies or is killed, at least you have closure. The wound is forever, but at least it's able to scar over, skin tightening. It doesn't still occasionally burst, blood leaking. I thought that was better, would be better than have a constant open wound, something always needing care and attention, rebandaging. But it's not. The pain of a loved one on the death of a child, there can be nothing worse. No, I have never been as hurt as much as I was and am by my brother choosing to leave my life, taking Cyan with him. But I now know something that would hurt worse, something I might not have recovered from. My brother and Cyan are alive as far as I know. I can hold on to the hope of seeing them again, a hope which I now know is a privilege denied to some. I will continue missing her and my brother, loving them, thinking of them every day. And this Wednesday I will say aloud to the universe, "Happy birthday, Cyan. I love you more than more, and whether I see you or not, I hope you have at least 100 more birthdays. Love, Uncle David." So I'm going to play a special song now for David and Cyan. It's called "I Will." John Schmidt featuring Annie Schmidt.
I didn't catch your name, but it's
Common to many families, the problem of estrangement. I've talked a little bit about it myself with my creative nonfiction memoir In Process, which is about my own father and his estrangement from his family and my estrangement from him. We're all working toward our healing. We're all working toward accepting our ghost, letting go of our ghost, and maybe in some way holding on to our ghost. For the last piece today, I'm going to share a story that I wrote for a contest, a flash fiction contest for the Missouri Review. It did not win, but I want to share it with you. Hope you enjoy it.
The crane operator. The crane rose above the city, a great yellow beast whose mouth gaped, whose body, rigid, strained and creaked to swing toward its target. It jerked and jolted, but he was in control. It aimed somewhat short, as the art of crane operation requires caution. The crane operator felt proud again as he reigned from here, a king of machination amid the downtown noise. He thought of a story he'd read years ago about a king and a clown, then softened to remember that it was the clown who emerged the hero after all. The clown who fell so far and fell so high into complete freedom from the ties that had so long held him stationary, while the king first mocked and then admired him. Well then, the crane operator would claim both clown and king. In this mood of acceptance, he accomplished the movements that earned him a good living, finished a day's work, and descended from the machine to head home in his Ford. A respectable enough carriage for day labor royalty. He chuckled. At home, a clown for sure. For who can love without acquiring a striped costume and several balls to juggle, constantly tripping over enormous feet? She waited there with the boy they had acquired in infancy. A pre-adolescent boy now who confounded them with his stubborn refusal to have any sort of ambition beyond getting a girl to play doctor, and masturbated so relentlessly they had to fasten his arms to the bed to prevent it. It wasn't normal. They wondered if it was a result of some deficiency in his natural parents. A taxi driver and a high school shop girl who had a falling out and couldn't patch it up, even for the sake of the boy. He and his wife took him to church. They tried to distract him, to interest him in reading or music or work around the house. He wouldn't mind, wouldn't do his chores. Once he lunged at his mother in an argument so that she lost her balance and fell down the stairs. It was only by the grace of God she didn't break her neck. Even then, the crane crane operator didn't send him back. The boy said he was sorry, but as a whole, he was a disappointment. He wouldn't even climb to pick the cherries from the tree in the backyard without constant reminders and threats. What boy doesn't like to climb? He'd rather be the butt of coarse jokes, it seemed, and grow up to drive coarse people to seedy hotels. And they wouldn't tip him either. Those sort of people don't. No account people, his own father would have called them, tipping back his fourth short glass of whiskey. Well, this was his family now. The errant boy with no ambitions and a wife too pretty to mind him much. But damn it, it was his. And tomorrow, his crane waited only for his hands on the gears, slow and determined to find the mark.
A good way to end the show. Talk to you next time. You've been listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more.